Welcome to episode 32 of Teachers Lift. Our guest today is Dr. Nora Hussein, an associate director of the Center for Language Education at HKUST. She's chatting with our host Levi, also at CLE at HKUST. They're going to be talking about work being done to make teaching observations a bit less intimidating for teachers and part of a more meaningful developmental process rather than just an evaluative criteria. They touch on many topics, including how to make teaching observations more approachable, precise, and adaptable to technology. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this episode. I know I did. So without further ado, here are Levi and Nora. Have a great episode, you two.
So much for agreeing to do this.
Thanks for inviting me over. I mean, I know I've been pushing it for quite a while, but here I am.
well, it's going to be worth the wait. And I think what we have to discuss today is important and it'll be meaningful to our listeners. So why don't we get started?
Sure.
All right. So welcome to Teachers Lift. My name is Levi. I am a lecturer at the Center for Language Education at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. And my guest today is Dr. Nora Hussein, who is currently an associate director for our center. So she is in varying degrees my colleague, my boss, and of course my friend. So hi, Nora.
Hi, Levi. Definitely not my boss. We're always working together collaboratively on equal terms.
we'll see how the podcast goes and we'll let the listeners decide. Okay. But it's great to talk to you today. And one of the many hats that Nora wears for our center is implementing an effective teaching observation process that's not only meaningful, revealing, but also approachable for the teachers at our center. And it's a really challenging and interesting project. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yep, here we are.
All right, so as sort of like the leader of this project, what are some of the general goals for teaching observations at the CLE?
Well, I'd say there are a lot of goals, but let me narrow down to a few at least, okay? Five. Let's do five, all right, for now. So I think one of the goals is learning and development, right? Observation is always for learning and development. And, you know, self-directedness, I mean, and collaboration, building trust and support. And having said all of this, of course, there's some sort of accountability. But what's most important, I like to say, is actually the learning and development. This has to come first. And what we want to do at the CLE, at our center, is to hope that observations can become a way for our teachers to really, you know, look at the teaching, inquire about their teaching. Now, I know not a lot of teachers might be excited about this, but, you know, hopefully to find out about their own teaching and learning and, you know, gathering evidence and reflecting on them, and hopefully go on to do something about the teaching or to challenge the teaching even more. And another goal is, of course, the, you know, being self-directed. And most of the time, if you see observations, right, it's, you know, you have a top-down approach. It's always a top-down approach. The management will tell you, okay, this is, you need to do observations, all right, this is how it's done, who to do the observations with, and so on. But I think it's time for us to start thinking and say, hey, teachers can take charge of their own learning. They're professionals. Let them do what they do best, right? So teachers should own the observations, you know, kind of let them choose who they want to do the observations with. And we know that this might not happen everywhere. And I think it's good to let teachers decide, right, who best to work with, and then to choose the approach. Okay, so there are so many approaches to observation. So it's not just like, you know, just one set approach of peer observations. There's so many that you can look at. And then they can decide how to carry that out, right? There's a lot more goals. Do you want me to carry on first or?
No, and I think you've given us quite a bit to talk about. In particular, I'm really interested in your observation that often we perceive these observations as a very top-down kind of thing. And yeah. I think part of what fuels that is the tendency to ascribe the learning to just the teacher being observed. And too often we don't make it a sort of like a mutual, a reciprocal thing that the observer can learn a lot in the process also.
Yeah. Right.
So what do you think the observer can learn during this observation process?
Okay, I think it's not only about the observer, but the observee themselves. But whatever it is, whether you are being observed or whether you're the one doing your observation, I think the first thing that you want to know exactly is, hey, it's going to go back into your own teaching, not someone else's teaching, right? So it's on your own teaching. So it's on your own learning. Okay. So, and I think for the observers, I mean, your question is that it depends on the purpose, right? So it depends on the focus of the observation. And observers have their own experiences of coming in into observations. And they might pick on things that when they started off, you know, they might not think, okay, that's my focus, all right? But something else crops up. And you say, hey, you know, this is something I can learn. And, you know, this is something I can do in my own teaching. So it goes back to the person, you know, actually observing or being observed. Yeah.
Right. And I think that realization can make the whole process less intimidating. It doesn't seem like one person is, well, for lack of a better expression, being evaluated, so to speak, right? It's yep. a two-part process. Like both people yeah. are sort of learning something from it.
Yeah.
I think as a practical matter, I think we can all recognize that one of the benefits of lesson observations is the development of better practices. That's like the tangible outcome. Your next lesson or your development as a teacher in the future is observably benefited from the observation. What do you think some of the intangible benefits of teaching observations are?
Okay, and this is what we actually need more, you know, than just focusing on the practices, you know, becoming better teachers. I mean, we know that, right? But I think what's most important is what's behind that observation. And I think it's about teachers taking charge of their own learning. That's so, so important. You know, once you do that, teachers will want to do observations, you know, because it's not something that you tell them to do, but it's something that they feel, oh, I need it. Right. And also it's about teachers working together. And, you know, teachers, we tend to, you know, meet along the corridors. We're busy people. Right. And most of the time, if you look at conversations, it goes along the corridors and so on. And observations, one place where you find a common thing to talk about as well. Right. So you get to talk, you converse more about your teaching, and it becomes kind of norm, you know, to talk. And I think most importantly is about building trust, isn't it? And support, right? So it's not going to be easy. Okay. So observations, when you hear observations, like, wow, okay. Oh, you know, so there's a lot of distrust, I think, at this point in time, especially if it's traditional based, right? So, but to know that it's okay to let others into your classrooms, and this can only happen when teachers, you know, put their gut down and feel that they trust each other to do it. So giving choices to teachers, right, to pick who they feel most comfortable with first, I think might be a good start.
I think I'm really glad you brought up this idea of trust, because it's often been sort of identified that the most important stage of the observation process is the post-observation stage, right? And and I think that's when the interaction is maybe a little bit more in depth. You can exchange ideas. And I think maybe in that post-observation stage is where this notion of trust can be developed. Why, and besides that, why do you think this post-observation stage is often considered the most important part of the process?
I'd say every stage is important. I'd say every stage.
Fair enough.
From what happens before the observation, during and after, but I can see why post-observation is seen as the most valuable, right? And because this is where teacher reflection might happen. Right. And if this reflection is carried out, I think most importantly, do it with someone. Right. Don't do it alone. Of course, I mean, we can do it alone. We can talk to ourselves. But still, I think it's good to have a peer to be there. All right. To have a dialogue about it. And what's most important is also what do teachers do after they reflect. Right. You know, when we do observations, it's kind of a one off. And then that's it. and the next year we do another one, right? So what happens in between? Do we have time to really say, hey, I want to change something in my teaching. I want to use what I've learned, right? And and go from there. Or do I want to try new ideas, right? Do I want to try new ideas, what I've learned? So I think it's most important to look at not the observations, but what happens after. And I think this is what we're trying to get at our center right now. Yeah.
Not just what happens after, but sort of the preparation for the next observation, right? How does one observation inform the next one? You mentioned peers. Now, I can only speak for myself because I'm rather insecure. But if I were to work with a peer, I would have the tendency to pick the ones that I'm already familiar with, probably even friendly with. I not only have a professional relationship, I probably have a social relationship with them as well.
Right.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's all right, right? I think it's all right. I think what you want to build first is that trust. And if you decide and, you know, you decide to go on with your peer first and you feel comfortable, right? And your peer might introduce you to someone else who's their peers, right? And then that's how it goes. It's building kind of a culture, you know, building kind of a network, but you don't force it in a way. So I won't tell you, hey, Levi, I'm going to be your observer because I'm your boss, for example, right? So, I mean, if you said, hey, Nora, I want you to look at it, and I say, yeah, sure, why not, right? So I think the status thing and, you know, who's what, I think it doesn't matter because after all, we're all teachers and we're learning all the time.
So you don't see sort of like competing interests between a professional relationship and a social relationship when it comes to teaching observations?
I don't think so. Unless it's a traditional notion of evaluating observations.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah, that's very important, right? You're not evaluating like, I'm not evaluating your performance, right? Eventually, if I look at your, if I observe you, I'll be looking at my own teaching and my own learning from it. So it's me, it's on me, it's not on you. Right. So that's the difference. Yeah.
I think it's that notion of evaluation that leads to some of these challenges to teaching observations. Right. I mean, we all can acknowledge the benefits, but needless to say, we all recognize that many teachers regard observations as really stressful experiences. What can we do about this?
Let's reframe this. OK, there are many ways to reframe this. So we can start by not making the observation as the evidence of performance. So let's put away that, you know, because usually we say we go for an observation, that observation is going to be the beat and end all of everything, right? So let's put that away and say, hey, that's not the way we want to evaluate teachers, all right? But let's think about what do teachers do after that. Right. Did they go on to do scholarship, for example, work from there? Do they actually do something with what they've learned, right? Change something in class, they innovate something. That's the one that you must be evaluating, right? And that's the one that you might want to include as evidence of your performance, right? Not the observations themselves. Okay. And then make that observation, make that even the evaluation, the observation is a small part of the staff review. So it doesn't become the only thing where you're going to be evaluated. And teachers can choose, right? Yeah, go ahead, Levi.
No, I'm nodding, although obviously our listeners can't see that I'm nodding, but I'm nodding because you've just said something that is so important and so clarifying for me. And I'm guilty of what you just mentioned as well. We tend to consider the observation itself as the main goal, as the sort of evaluative or reflective tool. And in fact, it isn't, right? So you can have for lack of a better expression, a poor lesson during your observation.
Yep.
But that's not what's important.
Yep.
What's important is how do you take that experience and then sort of move forward with it?
Agree.
Right? Right. So it's really not that 1 hour, 20 minutes or that 1 hour, 50 minutes that you're observed. It's really what you do after. And
yes.
I think if we could sort of change that mindset particularly in our center, the observations themselves will become less anxiety inducing.
Right. Yes, that's right. And also, I think reframing it also means that, you know, you got to stop directing teachers on what to do, how to do the observations. You know, you can set guidelines on what you need at the end, right? But you don't need to tell teachers in a lockstep procedure, say, hey, this time you do this. For half an hour, you have a meeting. You know, let the teachers do what they do best, right? And you need to move and shift away from focusing on individual performance, right? So not how you perform during the observation, but to learning about the observation, you know, collaboratively. And I think that's important.
And I think you've just sort of like raised my awareness to this notion of reflective tools, reflective teaching tools. And if we can perceive the observation itself as just one of those reflective tools, like any other reflective tool, like a diary, like an audio recording, whatever you might use, student feedback, right? It's just one tool in the toolbox. That's not really sort of the end all of the observation.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I think it might be good to start off with one. And then, of course, if you want to do more, yes. But of course, there's always the constraints of like, okay, time, right? So how do we work this out?
Right. So you just brought that. You can start off with one observation. And one of the criticisms of the observations is that they tend to be this one-off exercise. Right. So it's this snapshot that may not be an accurate representation of a teacher's everyday practices. What do you think about that idea?
But if you change that traditional notion, right, you don't use it to evaluate performance. So then we won't have this issue of, you know, being an accurate representation of everyday practices. Right. What you want instead is something more consistent. It's like building a culture. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of structures, for example, and support from administrators to make observations kind of more consistent thing. Right. But it has to come from the teachers. Yeah. So you can't force a teacher and say, hey, do 5 observations and you're going to learn. Right. They won't. But I think if you start with one, and teachers are comfortable about it, and they start talking, building dialogues with their colleagues about teaching, talking about teaching and so on, and openly. And I think once you get that, then you can talk about having more, right? Mm. Yeah.
Okay, but I think what we've identified is that the real value in it is the reflection that comes afterwards, right? But reflection has to be taken seriously by the people who are reflecting. Okay, I mean, it's easy for us just to sort of superficially say, oh, next time I'll do this without really, you know, considering it. How do we sort of encourage ourselves to really give it some meaningful thought when we are doing our reflections?
Just had, it's interesting that you ask, because I just came out of a kind of a conversation with one of my colleagues whom I observed this a few days ago, right? So, and when I started off with the reflection part, right? I was the person who observed the class. So I decided not to start off with saying, hey, do this, this, and this, and this, right? So I didn't start off with that. I think what I started off with questions, and I would say I would call it dialogic talk, right? So thinking about questions that would prompt the person to reflect on their own teaching. So prompts that could make even myself reflect, you know, at the same time. So it's questions. So it's, for example, what would you say perhaps if we do this? Do you think it can work? Or, you know, so things like open-ended questions, questions that build on and encourage people to have conversations about the lesson, right? Not a close thing like say, hey, this is what I saw, all right, let's do this next, you know? So it's about how, right? What way you can make things better, or okay, perhaps you might want to do it. What do you think? Do you think it could work in yours, and how does it work in mine, you know? So you kind of have a dialogue about it, and I think it'd be more fruitful.
So it has something going beyond what you just see during that lesson, right?
Yeah.
There, there is this notion that effective lesson or teaching observation should also touch into the teacher's beliefs, their sort of philosophies, right. their general, like, you know, approach to a class. Do you think that's an appropriate direction for teaching observations to go?
Okay, we have our own beliefs, all right? We have our own teaching philosophies, all right, in the classrooms, our own styles, right? Personal styles. Recognizing that, it doesn't mean that we can't look at others' teaching styles, right? So you don't need to impose, but you can actually have different perspectives and different ways. And I think if you see it, you have your own style, you have your own beliefs, you have your own perspectives, but it doesn't harm. You know, it's good that you start looking at what other people are doing as well, how their beliefs and practices does affect the way they teach and so on. Okay, but it doesn't mean that it's fixed, right? It's not set in stone, right? Because for me, for example, my beliefs change over the years. Maybe it changes every year, but you know, but. You develop from there and you learn more, you develop, you change your perspective and change your beliefs. And I think that's how our own professional teaching gets better. Yeah.
And maybe sharing those beliefs with each other is part of that trust building that you mentioned earlier, right?
Very important.
Right. So obviously you've already been observing colleagues. And I'm wondering, is there some sort of particular training qualities that an effective observer should have?
I wouldn't say training. I wouldn't go there because I think what I can, for example, what one person can train you in might not work for you. So I would say it's more of a learning process and do it collaboratively as you learn. You know, it's an experiential process. Yeah, I can go for training. Right. And then you said, OK, so, for example, these are the set kind of questions that you might want to ask. But, hey, does that really work in the context? Right. So there's a lot of contextual things that go on when you build that dialogue. So I think understanding probably more of the principles behind it, I think is more important than training itself. Mm. Understanding that it's supposed to build trust, rapport, supposed to, you know, it's supposed to be self-directed. If you understand those principles, then you begin to say, oh, yeah, I think training might not be even necessary.
Mm. I love how you refer to it as a learning process, because that reminds us again of a point that you made earlier, that it's a mutual process. Right, the learning process is not just for the teacher being observed. The observer takes equal part in the learning. And if we keep consistently remind ourselves that it's a two-part process, then maybe it can sort of start to diminish some of the intimidation that goes along with these teaching observations. Well, obviously, we're doing this interview on Zoom, given the current situation. And this reminds us that technology, I mean, we've all had to adjust to a different medium of teaching.
Yes.
So technology is sort of like this inextricable factor in day-to-day teaching now. What do you see some of the challenges of teaching observations, say, on a platform like Zoom?
I would say there's a lot more benefits. Okay, I can tell you one. Observers don't really need to be in a classroom, right? So you can actually not be there physically, all right? It's less intrusive because they can watch the recordings. But of course, you know, when students go into the breakout rooms, you need to ask students to record and then, you know, send you the recordings. I've done that and it's not that difficult. You know, it's just a few instructions that you need to give to the students. And because you can video record things on Zoom and, you know, in a physical classroom, you can't put cameras everywhere. Right. But in Zoom, you can see what's happening. You can hear. All right. You can see students' expressions. Right. On the gallery view. So you can watch how learners respond unless you share the screen, of course. Right. And then, you know, the faces become smaller. But you can actually have two different sets of videos and it shows, you know, how you as a teacher. All right, work in the classrooms and how your students work. And I think that Zoom itself, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say Zoom only, but, you know, on any platforms that has video recordings, I think it lends itself to observations quite well. Yeah.
Yeah, you brought up something again that I hadn't thought about, but just the physical presence of an observer in a classroom can dramatically alter sort of like the dynamics, the behavior of the people who are usually comfortable in that environment. Yeah. And on Zoom, you don't, say, for example, if you're monitoring group work as an observer, you're not physically walking group to group, hovering over their shoulder, looking at what they do. You just sort of join in a breakout room.
That's right.
You're sort of passively there and observing. There are other sort of technological applications. I read a little bit about this experiment from a professor in Newcastle University, Paul Seedhouse, and he is developing an app called Video Enhanced Observations.
Right.
VEO. What do you see the potential of this application?
I'm just trying it out as we speak. This morning itself. So I've had a trial. I'm using a trial version, and I'm looking at the benefits of using it at our center. It has a lot of potentials, and I think what's good about this is because it's a platform where you can share teaching videos. Right. So you can share teaching videos, and it's a closed platform. So it's for your group only. You can decide who to share it with. You choose, right, as teachers, who to share it with. And so maybe if you look at teachers being safe, maybe that could make it safer because it's a closed platform. It's just for your group. Right. And so what happens is that you can watch the videos, and when you watch the videos, you can sort of put tags on it, on the videos, right? So, and I think the beauty of it is because most of the time when we do things physically in the classroom, right, we can't know what's going on, yeah, how we react, you know, our faces and so on, where we are, what we say even, right, for example. So I think in that aspect, yes, it has a lot of strengths, but I think it has, while it has a lot of lots of potential, I think it has to be used very, very carefully, all right, for learning and development. So it can't go with the traditional notions of observations where you pinpoint what's wrong, right? Because if you have videos, you have evidence, correct? So I think it's not about pinpointing what's good, what's bad, okay? But you also need to understand that, right, as you're using it, okay, you need to understand that it's for your own learning, not to critique someone else's learning, but how can you learn from that person's, you know, classroom. Okay, so you get a better perspective and context as well. You know, when you watch a video, you don't know the context and you make certain assumptions. Mm-hmm. So I think you just have to be very careful with that.
Mm. I think it's worth reminding ourselves that this is an app. So it's something that you can use with your mobile phone. It's something you can use with a tab. It's, you don't have to bring a video camera into the class, set up these elaborate arrangements. So it's something that's very convenient to use. You also mentioned the tags, and I think we can go a little bit further into that because the tags are really useful. So for instance, you can tag student talk.
Yes.
And then you can just watch that section of student talk. You can tag instructions and watch that section of instructions. Yes. You can tag teacher talk and then compare the amount of teacher talk with the amount of student talk.
Yeah.
Right. So that's also a really great function of this technology. I'm glad you're already using it. I'm sure you'll be sending an email to the entire center about the potential of a VEO. You brought up something I hadn't thought about until just now. Who do these videos belong to?
You mean teaching videos?
Right. If we were to record ourselves, put it onto some sort of platform that's, I don't know, for storage or even for sharing, who would those videos belong to?
I think it belongs to the owner. And it's the owners, like, for example, I mean the teachers. Right. But of course,
is that both observer and observee or just the teacher being observed?
I think it's both the observer and observee. Yeah, I think it's both. And I think the most important thing is, of course, students, right? There's privacy issues. Of course, you need to ask students for permission. And I know in this day and age, I think very unlikely that students would disagree if you're saying that you're using it for your own teaching and learning. I mean, it's not going to be on YouTube, right? So it's not a main channel, but this is something in-house, right? So it's a safe place. And teachers can decide who they want to share it with. Right. So you can have your own portfolio of videos. Then you can decide who to share your videos with. So you don't need to share your videos with everybody, mm-hmm. right? But you share it with people who feel that, you know, you want to share with.
But right. It would be an individual decision. It wouldn't be something that it's suddenly the property of the center. And then it's put onto some sort of intranet or whatever, that anybody who's interested in watching it can watch it.
No.
You don't see that? You don't see that as just sort of like a an inventory of...
I guess if I use it for scholarship, for example, mm-hmm. right? I still need permission. Right.
Yes.
I still need to ask the owners, will you be comfortable if I show these videos? Right. Will you be or will you be not? Right. And if not, I don't think you have that right to use it. Mm. Yeah. So I think it belongs to while I'll say it belongs to the center, but it still belongs to the owner. Right. I think there's a sort of ethics and practices that I think you need to go by. And I think that's why we're not like, you know, saying that videos, we just put it on YouTube and we share it. And so on. So it's going to be like a more closed platform.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, if we start sort of taking a look towards the future and how you envision teaching observations happening in the CLE, there has been this idea that you don't have to observe an entire lesson. Like you can pinpoint certain parts of a lesson. Do you see that as something being effective?
Yes. I don't think you need to have the whole video up there, right? I don't think you need to watch every part of the lesson, but I think you can zoom in. And if you have video recordings, the better, because then you can zoom in and, you know, say, hey, let's look at this, right? 5 minutes of it. I think 5 minutes is good. 5 minutes is a good way to start. And you can pinpoint different parts or different aspects, right? So it depends on your focus, yeah.
Right, so the two teachers involved can just sort of agree that you're going to visit during this part of the lesson.
Yeah.
And then you can leave after that part of the lesson is over. The intrusion is minimal, right?
Yeah.
There's a very narrow focus that you can probably develop a lot of content from in that type of focus. There's also this other idea, just to make teaching observations even more terrifying than they seem, is that because there's this preparation that goes into arranging a teaching observation, that oftentimes teachers don't act normally during the teaching observation. And in order to truly get a reflection of what they do on a day-to-day basis, you do these unannounced drop-ins. Is there any future for this at all?
No.
Okay.
Please,
thank goodness. Thank goodness.
I don't think, you know, doing an unannounced drop-in is very useful for anyone, you know.
Well, we did toy with this idea of these things called walkthroughs. I cannot remember the exact expression that you had for it.
Oh, the walkthroughs, right? The walkthroughs
right.
are supposed to be announced, right? It's not unannounced. I think, gone are the days where we should drop in unannounced. I mean, what good does it do for the teacher and the, you know, the observer? Right. So I think it's good that I think making observations more naturally accepted. It doesn't mean that you need to go unannounced. Right. Because there was notion. Right. Because cash teachers were the most natural.
Right.
Right.
OK, I'll forget I ever brought that up. And so should the listener. It's not going to happen, at least not in our center. All right. And just sort of as a way of making this a more consistent exercise at our center, how can we do this? How can we sort of get the administrative support so we have the time to sort of visit each other? I mean, obviously, our timetables can be logistical nightmares to get in sync. So how can we make this a more consistent process at our center?
I think because we're a very big center, as you say, you know, and it's a logistical nightmare just even to get, you know, time together. But I think what's most important is to give each teacher that time and space to reflect a little bit. I know sometimes when we do observations, it tends to be timed in quite a rush. And I think it happens most of the time because teachers have a deadline to meet, right? And that's when the month before, then everything happens. But I think it shouldn't, it need not be that way, right? I mean, you're given like a year. So plan it. So for example, plan when, right? When's best? And I would do so possibly when I have a lot of space and time when I'm not doing my marking. Okay, unless you're watching marking, right? Watching feedback as observations, then maybe that's a good time. But I think what's most important is to time it well so that, you know, you diminish all the stress that you might have, you know, and it's all about planning, I think. Yeah,
I think part of the planning, there's maybe we can create something like working groups, like groups of teachers who can take turns observing each other multiple times over a semester or a year. Do you think that's something that's workable in our center?
I think it's workable, but it must be something that doesn't put additional stress on teachers. You know, sometimes when we get groups going and I said, okay, groups, you're committed to doing this, you know, how many times? And then it becomes a chore. You know, so, and that's not what we want there. I think we want, well, at the same time, to sort of develop this more organically. Yeah. And more naturally rather than say, hey, we'll do five observations, you know, or we have working groups on that. So let it come. I'd rather let it come naturally because then we will see groups being formed, right? You don't identify these groups because they come together on their own.
Right, right.
And then they decide what they want to do. And I think observation is all about this, ownership.
Okay. So you don't see any need for like a specialized group of teachers, like academic group leads. Like say, for example, we have these academic group leads who would be focused on observations at the CLE.
Why? We're all teachers.
Maybe something that makes it just more consistently at the forefront of our minds, because as you mentioned, I mean, after the semester gets rolling, we're just deadline fighting, right? We're just constantly trying to meet one deadline after another. And if we do have some group that consistently reminded us in a very approachable way, not in a very demanding way, right? In a very approachable way that, hey, have you done your teaching observation? No, we don't want that.
No, we want, you know, self-directedness, as I said right from the very beginning. That's what we want. You know, teachers taking charge of their own learning without us telling you, hey, you need to finish your observations by when, or reminding teachers.
Right.
I think we're all professionals, so let's stick to that.
Okay.
And from there, then move the observations, right?
Okay.
Because if we keep reminding and say, okay, for example, the academic lead say, hey, you need to do your observations, it becomes like, you know, it's like, for example, my mom hounding me and said, hey, do this, you know?
Okay. Well, I think in our conversation today, you've made this idea of teaching observations a lot more, a lot easier to embrace. I mean, and in particular, just some of the points. I just want to make sure that I got your message accurately. Some of the points is that it's about learning. It's about development. The learning and developmental process is mutual, not just for the observer.
Yep.
Excuse me, not just for the observee, but for the observer also. It's not intended to be this top-down sort of mandate that you have to do a certain amount by a certain amount of time. It's more of a organic process in which when you feel comfortable reaching out to your colleagues that you can sort of develop your own relationship in that particular capacity. And it's all about a reflection of self-directedness, right?
Yes. Can I add to that?
Sure.
Also, I think what's most important is not making that observation the evaluation.
Yes. That was a critical point. And
yeah.
In fact, the observation itself is just one very small part of this overall process of teaching observation.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like you don't make it the only thing that evaluates teachers, you know, then teachers would kind of freak out, right? Because they'll say, oh, this is the only thing and this is what I need to put my effort, my whole year's worth of, you know, me being professional is decided upon one lesson observation. So that's something to think about.
It's interesting that the observation in the teaching observation might be the least significant part of the teaching observation.
Yes. And I think if we get this message through, you know, to the schools, especially, you know, especially in the schools other than higher education, I think it's really important because I know quite a lot are changing, but it's still this appraisal process. And I think we need to move away from that.
Mm. Yeah. And it's a necessary process. I mean, if I think about seriously, if I think about, I've been teaching for a while now, and if I think about sort of the last time I was critiqued, was probably when I was in graduate school.
Right.
Doing your practicum. Yes. Right. And then suddenly it just stops when you, after you transition into the professional world. And it's a necessary thing to sort of occasionally remind yourself of, you know, where, what direction you're in, how, what you're doing well, and certainly what we can be doing better.
Yeah. I think it's not having someone to comment on your teaching, but it's more about you looking at it and say, hey, what do I learn from someone else's, for example? And for the person commenting on your teaching, it's not about like, you know, critique what to do better, but it's about, hey, have a dialogue about it, you know. What happened here, you know, is it something that caused this, and is it something that is done on intentionally? Because I know teachers do some things intentionally in class, right, that you might say, oh, that's not something to do, but
Well, thank you, Nora, so much for your time today. Thank you for demystifying this teaching observation expression that so many of us are afraid of. You gave us an enormous amount of clarity and a lot to think about moving forward. So thank you again for joining us.
Thanks, Levi. Thanks a lot for inviting me. Thanks. Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Teachers Lift. This podcast is a collaborative effort from the Center for Language Education at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, the Center for Applied English Studies at the University of Hong Kong, and the English Language Center at the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. If you've enjoyed this episode and you want to make sure to catch the next one, be sure to subscribe on the podcasting app of your choice. We'd also appreciate if you can like and subscribe on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those social media things, you know where they are. You can find out all the links on teacherslift.com. We'll see you next episode. Bye-bye.